Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
He's the award-winning superstar you love despite yourself in Peaky Blinders, and he's the award-winning superstar you love despite yourself in Succession. Together, they star in the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Long Day's Journey Into Night in the West End until June. So please welcome the delightful Daryl McCormack and brilliant Brian Cox.
Yes, gentlemen!
Hello.
These two are both knackered because they're in the middle of it, aren't you?
We are knackered, yeah.
Okay, lean a bit further into the mic. So, where are we? What's going on? This amazing play, Long Day's Journey, is on the way. You've been previewing. It opens this week, does it?
Opens on the 2nd of April. Tuesday, is it?
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Okay, good. He wants to frame it for us. Brian, you frame it for us if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. Long Day's Journey Into Night. It's a play written by Eugene O'Neill, which was never meant to be performed.
Yes.
It was a play that he wrote, and he wrote it that it was to be published 25 years after his death. It's a play about his own family and about his... He was consumptive. He had TB around 1912, and it's a story about his mother, who was a morphine addict since Eugene's birth, and his brother James, which Daryl plays, was an alcoholic, and I'm the only person in the family that is pure.
Yeah, how's that feel?
Oh, unusual.
After the last few years.
Yes, unusual.
Right, so Daryl, how did this... We were talking before, we didn't know whether to ask you the question or not. Who do they sign up first? Do they sign... Brian up.
Oh, they signed up me, yeah. I was the main name. I was the main draw. Yeah.
But when they signed Brian, is that because, like, well, we can get anybody we want now because they all want to work with Brian Cox. How does it happen? How did you get the call? Tell us about the story.
Well, I actually came across this play 10 years ago when I was in drama school. Right. So this is a play I've always wanted to do for a good 10 years. It's definitely been on a bucket list of mine. Last year working on a different project, and then I heard through the grapevine that this play was being put on and that Brian was going to be attached to play James Tyrone, and instantly something like that grabs your interest because, I mean, someone of Brian's stature, you always hope to work with actors like Brian. And yeah, the audition came along and I just went in, and it was one of those things where I was like, you know, it's the play's been with me so long that I was just like hoping for the stars that it would come through, and it did, and I got an offer, and then, you know, we started rehearsals in February, and kind of we've into the first week now.
How was your first date together?
It was fine. It was good.
Yeah.
When did you meet? What happened?
Yeah, it was fine. It was great. I mean, you know, when you get, you know, we're all this. I mean, the thing about actors is they're all the same. You know, I mean, you know, we all come from the same horror.
I love this.
You know, there's very little difference between us in that sense. I mean, everybody goes, oh, it's Brian Cox, it's Daryl, but really, we're. Mm. It's very equanimous, you know.
Yeah.
There is such a word.
It's so funny that you describe it like that, because obviously we get lots of actors in here and we get lots of musicians here, they get lots of comedians in here. And comedians, they say, you know, at dinner parties or parties, comedians have to find another comedian to talk to because they don't really know how to talk to anybody else. You know, and when you see actors, they do have something going on between them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you're in company with an actor and it's all going great, and then another actor comes in and something happens and us non-actors don't know what that is. What is that happens, Daryl?
I think it's a commonality of just, you know, what this industry is, the love and the sometimes, you know, hate.
The horror.
Yeah, the horror.
The anxiety, the angst, right. The context.
Yeah, it's a continual mystery. And I think just the passion that maybe we all have for this work. Because, you know, to get up on stage, you know, 8 times a week and throw yourself into something is sometimes a little crazy at times, and I think there is a passion that is probably that is found from very early on, that I think a lot of actors share. And yeah, I think that's just, that's the common ground.
And in theory, this is me now doing what I just talked about. This is me not being an actor, asking you actory questions, right? Which I know I do for a living, but I still come a cropper very often, right? So here's another, I think this is going
to
happen.
Are
now.
You about to come a cropper?
Yeah, I think so. I can sort of sense it. Do you know what I mean? Here we go. So you know, like tennis players, right? Yeah. So obviously the better you are at tennis, the better you are at tennis, because you get to stay in the tournament for longer because you're not knocked out in the first round. And okay, you can go and practice when you've been knocked out and you can go and hit with your coach, but it's not the same as being in competition every other day like the Federers of this world are and the Djokovic's. So in theory, based on my tennis theory, right, so I'm coming to cropper, Brian, right?
Okay.
All players should just keep getting better because you do them every night. Yes or no?
Well, yeah, but it's the material. You know, each material has challenges you.
No, but that said, so material notwithstanding, right? Yeah. Play should get better every single night because you've just done it one more time.
Yeah. No, when we play it, yeah. I mean, we work to improve. You know, we work to. Well, also we work to own it. You know, I mean, a lot of the times in theatre, you know, it's owned by the director. You know, it's not. You know, and then the actor has to kind of wait until the director comes along and then finally allows you to own it.
Right.
You know, and.
Or goes home.
Or goes home.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree, Daryl?
I would agree. I think it is. It's a 3-month run and you do have to own it. I think otherwise you're going to really check out mentally. And I think that's the joy, really. It's 3 months of your exploration with
And that happens in every play you do. I mean, that that's the commonality, as Daryl rightly says, between actors, that we all start from the same footing. No matter what our status is, that's what we start from. You know?
Yeah.
And status, it's the most egalitarian kind of job there is, because we're all equal, you know. We're not, there's nobody that's more unequal than anybody else. I mean, what the public make of us and what they, and all the plaudits we get and all that, but the work is different. The work is something else.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you say that, because it is egalitarian, yet because nobody scores a goal, there's no finite score on the board.
No, there's not.
So it is judgment, isn't it? It's judgment between each other, between the characters, between the director, the producer, the audience every night, the vibe, the weather outside, whether there's been a delay with the trains or not. And it all comes in, so you never know what's going to happen, Daryl.
Yeah, I remember being on, it was a Noel Coward a few years ago. I did a Martin McDonagh play, and I think it was the World Cup at the time.
Yeah.
And I think England were doing all right in the World Cup. And there was moments where, I mean, that was a comedy now, so it was a little bit lighthearted, but you could sense, you know, that the some of the men in the audience were being dragged along to the play by their wives, but they were wanting to check the score of the football match halfway through, and some little flashes of light, and that's, you know, that's the kind of part of theatre which is unexpected, is you bring in the atmosphere of the current world. And I think that's why a classic is never outdated, because you're constantly, it's constantly being renewed by the world we live in
now.
It's always being looked at through the prism.
So this play is based in 1912. Is there a contemporary twist to the production of it, or are we back in 1912?
No. I mean, we're back in that. I mean, there's the only is the style. I mean, it's very bleak. Would you describe it bleak visually?
Bleak and kind of minimalist.
Minimalist. Quite, you know, it's a very simple set, and it's really focusing on the acting, which is what in a play like this you have to do, because ultimately that's what it's about. It's about the relationships, you know, the father with his two sons, the mother with who's the morphine addict with her husband and her two sons, and the father with his wife and the two boys, and then the boys with their father and their mother. So it's a family play. It's very much a family play, and there are some families that are more warped than other families, family is pretty warped.
Some requiring less drama than others.
Comes
with drama built in.
Yes, exactly, and it's also about how Eugene O'Neill sort of formed his. And the other element in the play, which I think is quite important, is they're all first-generation American, so they're Irish. And I've discovered really interesting things, like how the Irish were treated when they went to America in the 19th century. They were treated really very badly, not well at all. They were kind of regarded as the sort of blacks of that time.
Right.
And that was what's hard. And so if you may, and for instance, James Tyrone going to Yankee, the play is set in New London, Connecticut, and there's a house that he, Tyrone did this, he had this great career playing the Count of Monte Cristo, which he played 5,000 times.
What?
5,000 times he played. He never missed a performance. He played it 5,000 times. But he felt it was the ruin of his career because he was never, he'd also acted with Edwin Booth, who was the great actor of his day, American actor, who was also the brother of John Wilkes Booth, who assassinated Lincoln. And Edwin Booth went into purdah for about a year and then finally came out and emerged as the finest American actor of his time. Well, James Tyrone acted with him, and he played Othello to his Iago, and they used to swap round and play Iago Othello. And he got the praise from saying, you know... And he, Booth said, he's the finest Othello. He plays it better than I do.
Wow.
And, of course, that was a great mark. And that's what his thing is, that he sold his soul for a mess of pottage. But then he came from abject poverty.
Yeah.
You know.
So why wouldn't he? Yeah, yeah.
And so, and that's the Irish, don't you agree, Darren? The Irish influence is very strong in the
play. Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Daryl, working with The Ledge, yeah, of course, you can have a 19-year-old actor who's as good as a 90-year-old actor, but they won't have done much stuff because they as because he can't because he's not been around as long.
Yeah.
What have you learned from the maestro over here?
Well, this is the thing, Brian, you know, kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, the best actors of our generation are the, like, there is that level ground, and I think that's the most important thing. Is that that's where true like collaboration is actually felt, because you're invited to actually generally partake in a, and you're seen as an equal, and that is more honoring than anything else. And I think the difference obviously is the experience, and you just learn from working with someone like Brian through, you know, 3 months. I'm going to learn a lot more than I would have, you know, with someone who's just started off. Or and I think, yeah, that's it. It's just that invitation. And just to witness, you know, how he's perfected his craft and how he comes up every night.
And also how boring I am on occasion. How boring, how bad-tempered I am. I get very bad-tempered.
You're not bad-tempered. Oh, you're just a
Darryl,
bit cantankerous now and again.
I have my moments, don't I, Darryl? Never with my fellow members of the cast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
What has stood out with him, that working with him, though? Is it his stillness? Is it his presence of mind? What are you, if you could take one thing from his arse, his toolbox, what would it be? Not his grumpiness, right? Anything but his grumpiness, what would you take?
I think Brian just... There is something about actors like Brian that he forces you into the moment, you know? And that just comes from skill and commitment.
Yeah.
And as well, like, we've done a week of shows, and there's not one night where Brian is going to give me the same reading of something. And so, like, on Saturday night, he came right up to me in a certain moment, and I was not thrown, but I was like, okay, I'm in this. And there's something about, like, actors like Brian where you just go, I don't know what I'm going to get every night, and that's something you can't really fake.
Like that
just comes from...
Do you like it?
Of course I like
it. Yeah, thank God.
That's what you ask for. That's what you...
I think that behooves you to be able to reinvent every night. You know, to
Do you know what you're going to get every night from yourself?
No. I mean, I don't quite know. I mean, it's a different experience. That's why I love the theatre, because the theatre is not... It's never a constant. The idea that you're doing the same thing every night, you're not.
Yeah.
You're doing variations on a a very strong theme. So that's, and you're allowing yourself to give yourself into those variations. So one night you play a moment very differently from the night before, or two nights before, or some, you know, so there's always that endless discovery of the text and what the text means, you know. And a lot of our, a lot of what's going on in the theatre now is not enough text-based about actually what the writing is about.
Yeah.
And that's the thing you, I learned when you work with somebody like Jesse Armstrong, you know, and those guys doing, and the gals, the great Georgia Pritchard and the great Lucy Prebble on Succession, they're your go-to because they're the basis of
the
what
scribes.
Your work is. They're the scribes.
Yeah.
And the scribes are important. There's a little bit more, you know, flexibility about that. But my thing is I always go back to that. That was the way I was trained. I was trained to think about the writer. Yeah. You know, the writer, you know, without a writer, you've got nothing.
Yeah.
Daryl, I would be hung, drawn and quartered if I didn't ask you about Peaky Blinders. What was it like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it came quite early in my career, to be honest. I had just moved to London. But, yeah, to work with the likes of Killian and, you know, at the time, late Helen McCrory and... Yeah, it was to step into such a big show that was quite settled and set up was something quite daunting. But it's definitely, it's been a highlight of my career thus far.
Of course it has, yeah. Was it, I mean, what was the workload like?
I was fortunate that I was a supporting role. So I was in every episode, but I got to get to take part in the fun stuff. Like, you know, I was part of the gang. So I got to shoot a fake gun and just, like, you know, beat people up. And that's kind of like, you know...
Which is why we do our profession.
Right, exactly.
To be in a situation where we can beat people up.
And the smoke machine and do the slow-mo walk and all that stuff with the music in the background. So that's kind of like any boy's dream, to kind of like play pretend in that regard. And the suits and...
What's the name of the MMA guy? Connor...
McGregor. So,
McGregor. Have you heard about this film he's in?
He's in Roadhouse. Is that the film?
Yeah, with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd says that Connor said, like, we're going to do the fight scenes. And Paul said, well, you know, I do a bit of MMA. You just so feel free.
Mm.
He said, no, you don't want to say that. He said, no, you know, seriously. And then he hits him once and that was it. He's like,
no way.
Onto his agent, onto the hospital, saying, what did he do that for? He said, well, because you said it was all right. You idiot.
That was very foolish of Paul.
It was quite foolish, wasn't it, Brian? I'm glad you concur.
It's like giving whiskey to the proverbial.
Yeah. Did you hear this story over the weekend about the movie? Peaky Blinders movie, Killian.
I've heard news, but I haven't. I don't really. I'm not one for always staying in touch with the news. But yeah.
Yeah. No. I heard about it this morning. Apparently, Killian Murphy signed up for the Peaky Blinders movie. What else do you know about it?
That's all we know. But there's been rumours of it, hasn't it, for a while?
I can't say anything anyway. You know that I won't be dropping anything. But no, I haven't really heard too much.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
That might not be good news for you then.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? We'll see.
Right, so Long Day's Journey into Night, previews carry on. It opens a week tomorrow. What, if you had your eye, well, you have got your eye out the creases. Work still to be done, or are you just having fun there?
Yeah, it's just, you know, when we, this is the thing, you know, when you rehearse a play, you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. And if you're lucky, you might get one run through before you go in the theatre.
Right.
So the fact that you know, owning the play is the hardest bit of it all, because you want to take it away from the director and your designer and own it for yourself. And that's how, what they see is they see those people on that stage. And that's the process of previews, because you're starting to re-own the thing which you haven't had.
Right.
Because it's so last minute, you know. The and especially a play like this, which lasts 3.5 hours. You know, we start at 7 o'clock, we get out at what time do we get out?
10:30
more. Thereabouts, you know, 10:30.
And I didn't know 3.5 hours.
You know, and then we do a 1 o'clock matinee as well. So we do 8 performances of those a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's war.
It really is war. General Patton said that, didn't he? Forgive me, God, I know it's war, but I love it, or something like that.
It is war, you know, but, you know, and also so that we are trying to get the play to us, and that takes, doesn't it, Dara?
Jeez.
That's the thing that takes the time.
Because
we've been
of
through
a play.
So many technical aspects.
Because you do, if you don't mind saying, you do both look a bit tired.
Right.
I mean, it is early in the morning, but fair enough.
So I'm knackered.
Previews for the rest of the week and rehearsals in the day still.
Oh, yeah.
So So what might you be doing? How does that work? Today, will you be going like, what do you think, scene three, scene four?
Yeah, we'll be doing that kind of thing. I mean, I've... Because I'm not very well at the moment, so I'm a diabetic, so my blood sugar kind of drops like that. So I have to be very careful with it.
I've got some chocolate brownies. Do you want one?
Well, I just have to test my thing. I won't have a chocolate brownie. Thank you.
Right. They're gorgeous.
I think I'm okay.
Mark Wogan made them.
I know they're good, but anyway. So that you're just trying to own the play.
Got it.
You know, and we're all in that same position that we want to get into it.
Yeah. Good. 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 What else? What else is going on? What else are you up to?
Oh, I mean, just enough. This. Our entire life.
You've got an hour between 4:30 and 5:30 every day.
That's typical when you go to one of these breakfast shows. They all go, oh, what else are you doing? Yeah. Oh, yes, well, you know.
Absolutely nothing.
Jeez, Louise. I mean, is it this known as the American play? Is this the one?
This is the Great American Play.
This is it?
Yeah,
this is the Great American Play.
Yeah, this is the Great American Play, which, as I say...
And now you know why.
Well, I mean, he never wanted it to be performed.
Yeah.
That was the thing. It was supposed to be read when, and it was supposed to be published 25 years after his death.
Right, I did talk to you about Arthur Miller off the air.
Oh yeah,
I'm just fascinated by Arthur Miller. I saw a few documentaries on him. Went to try and find his house once in Connecticut, like a bit of a stalker, if I'm being really honest. But anyway, didn't. But you met Arthur Miller.
Yeah, I met him a couple of times. Yeah, he was great. He was an extraordinary man. You know, because I did this production. I mean, I was in Russia at the time of Glasnost, which was in the 80s, and I was seeing a lot of plays, and I was asked to come back. I was working. I did a series of workshops with these kids, Russian, at the Moscow Arts Theatre School, and I did a series of workshops in Shakespeare, funnily enough. And then they asked me to come back, and I'd seen all these plays about the political situation and political hysteria, and I said, well, the one play you should be doing is The Crucible. You know, Arthur Miller's The Crucible, and they didn't... It's a play... They don't have a word for Crucible. It's called Salemsky Koldonyi, which means the Witches of Salem. And so I went and we did that, and Arthur was great. He was very helpful on it. Sadly, he never saw it, but we won a few awards, and these kids, and actually they put it in the repertoire of the Moscow Arts, which was quite an honour.
Before you came in again on the air, Daryl, I did say the last time Brian was in was to talk about his BBC Maestro online acting series. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. But maybe
I'm getting a master week.
I'm getting a masterclass every night, so yeah. I'm good. And
up close and personal.
I think you're fine.
Yeah,
And you don't have to pay the BBC $54.99.
Exactly.
By the way, worth every penny, as you know, because I loved it. Well, listen. Good luck to you both. How are you feeling? Out of 10, what do you think?
Oh, you mean energy wise or
confidence?
Confidence.
I mean the confidence.
Do you know what is the amazing thing about working on a great play? I think is actually it gets into you.
Yeah.
At some point, and I think we're just at that point where we're just starting the process of having an audience in. But that's the great thing about working on great writing is that it slowly just seeps into your bones,
and it takes a while to own it, you know. And that's what we're trying to do is own the play for us, you know. Get away from all the technical side of it, that we actually get back to doing the play. Because as I say, you know, we got one run through, didn't we, virtually before we got into the theatre, and we were straight into technicals.
Hats off to you, yeah. I mean, I think... go on, do you want to say something?
But is there one moment in the 3.5 hours where you really look forward to? Is there one line that you deliver and you think, this lads?
Yes, it's the curtain call.
It's the can-can. Because they've got so much extra energy at the end of it.
I really look forward to the curtain call.
Confetti flying.
Come on tomorrow.
No, the curtain call is the best moment of the evening.
Wow.
It's over.
I'll tell you what. Something, isn't it? Long day's journey into tonight. You've got to go and see. It sounds fascinating. The Wyndham's Theatre till Saturday the 8th of June. Preview this week, opens a week tomorrow on April the 2nd. longdaysjourneylondon.com. I think a controlled round of applause. The fact they even bothered to turn up today. Thank you, guys. Yay! This is the last thing you need.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you.
Great to see you, man.
Chris.
Thank you, Brian. Always welcome. You know that.
Thank
brilliant.
You.
Brilliant. What a thing
and
to
I
do.
And I promise I won't say bad words anymore.
No, I don't care. I don't, we just got to say what we say. I mean, we do 3.5 hours a day, but it's different.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, well, you're boogieing all the time.
We're boogieing, we're rock and rolling.
You're
allowed
to boogie. We can't boogie. Yeah. You know,
coffee's brought
text.
In, feet up on the desk, chocolate brownies galore.
Yeah, exactly.
All going on. Thank you.
When you want your favourite 80s songs to lift your mood, play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I didn't mean to hurt you.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.